1, 2, 3, ha. The thoughts I tucked inside my head, nearly folded, never read. I kept them just in case you came around here. Well, now you're back to make your case, as if a few words could replace the love you threw back in my face for years. But I told you once, told you twice, you better keep on running. You can't lay the track and say you didn't see that train coming. If you're somehow not in the knowing, the seeds are sown, they've been growing.
Dylan Paul, ladies and gentlemen, from Lawrence, Kansas, talented songwriter, actor, musician. He can also run like a raptor, and he's an Eagle Scout.
Dude, you got it.
Yeah.
Right there. I feel like, yeah, I should clap for myself.
I read your acting bio, so.
Oh, nice. Yes. On the resume there.
Also a skilled with a rapier.
Rapier and dagger.
Right. Yeah, Does that make you a skilled rapierist?
Arguably, you know, it's very punny. Very punny.
Sorry, this has already started out a bad foot. So we're listening to a new track that you brought in, and it's called what?
Growing. This is this is one of the new tracks that will probably be on the next album that we're cutting right now, and should probably be released in about 3 or 4 months. Yeah, and this is the breakdown where I'm about to butcher the rhythm.
Okay.
It's pretty close.
Let's listen to it.
It's pretty exciting.
They've been growing. Whoa. They've been growing. You better keep on running. You can't lay the track and say you didn't see the train coming. If you're somehow.
Dylan's making this sort of embarrassed face right now, and I'm trying to figure out why exactly that is.
Oh, well, there was right there. I always miss the swing eighth pattern in that piano on that part right there. It's it's exciting.
So modest, man. Sounds good to me.
Well, it's fun stuff, you know.
So what is this basically coming together as? Is this a record that you're got your sights set on, or what?
Yeah, I think we're going to release a full-length album. We have this EP out called One at a Time, and it's just 6 tracks. Mm-hmm. And very, very low budget, and we just kind of released that last year,
so
kind
like
of under the radar.
$50K, $75K.
Yeah, basically, like, we're trying to go under 5 mil is what we're shooting for. And so yeah, we're going to release a full-length album, maybe with some tracks off of this one, because when we play them live, it's just a completely different experience, you know? But we're going to have at least 12 to 15 tracks on the next album, and this is one that we hope will be on it. It kind of has more of a jazz swing feel to it, and I like that.
Okay. Well, that's all we got from the ongoing project. We're going to take a listen to an EP now. It's called One at a Time. When did you put this sucker out?
Gosh, I guess I put this out last May, but I'm not really. Yeah, I guess last May. It's sort of strange because I had to record all the tracks sort of out of sequence and then put it all together while I was doing different acting contracts around the country. So I guess you could say last May.
Okay, first song is called One at a Time.
My dear, I don't know what to do. Poison seems honest as a promise from you. Rip it as it comes down, fiddling the rebound when you thought the worst was done. All your best assumptions now are turning to connections as I realize what you've become. I just wanna stay warm in this world that can be so unkind.
So let's get right to it, Mr. Paul, if that is your real name.
Right.
Which it's kind of your real name. It's your middle name?
Sort of my middle name, yeah.
Yeah, and people around here would know you as a Hiltman.
That's right. It's a large clan. There's a lot of us running around.
Cool. So I heard you had a brush with American Idol. Is that true?
Oh, Lord. American Idol. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely had a brush with American Idol. You could say that.
Can you tell us a story? How far did you get?
Sure. Let's see. Well, when I did American Idol, I got from, I guess it was 10,000 down to top 50, which is technically actually the top 25 because they take the 25 best and the 25 worst. And it was very strange.
And you were...
Hopefully in the best.
Oh, but you don't know, huh?
No, I mean, it could be that I was absolutely horrid. You know,
I'm
know.
Sure that's not the case.
But they, it was very strange because me and one other kid, they actually had a camera crew follow, and they had me re-enter as if I just walked in off the streets and casually, you know, look around like, oh, there's an audition going on here. I guess I haven't been waiting in line for the last 3 days. I'll just walk in and sing. And
fortunately, you're an actor, and you were able to pull that off.
Right, right. Yeah. It was great, though, because they had a Steadicam following me, right? And the Steadicam walked right into a waiter in the hotel lobby as he was filming, which was great. But basically, I got into the final round, and I walked in, and they asked me... This is after all the producers had been through it, and after I'd already gone through the questioning, and they had already, you know, tagged me. They asked me, you know, what makes you think that you're the most talented kid in America? Or what makes you think you're the greatest undiscovered talent in America? And I looked at him and I said, I don't think American Idol is going to determine the greatest undiscovered talent in America. I mean, come on, let's be honest. So I didn't exactly start my final round audition off on the best foot.
Was that to Simon?
That was to Simon. Simon was really offended by me, just kind of in general. But that's how it goes, you know?
So were the cameras rolling at this point? You never made it on air, right?
Oh, yeah. The best thing was seeing the reaction of the camera crew, because you don't see this, but, I mean, the crew was watching the entire time, and they're going crazy. Like, so I walk in and I say that, and they'd already... earmarked me as this is one of the guys that, you know, we'll see if he goes on. And they had advised me in the prior round not to sing the song that I'd been singing, which was actually a Gavin DeGraw song called Chariot. And I was going to sing some Stevie Wonder, but, you know, if I butcher Stevie Wonder in front of the entire country, how awful am I going to feel? So I decided, you know, I'm going to go ahead and sing Gavin DeGraw. And I sang it, and it was really good. And the song is about how nothing that's natural is good enough, how it has to be artificial and affected to be good enough. And at the end of the song, Simon says, that's excellent. He says, why would you sing a song about watermelons? And I just looked at him, and I was like, that was the stupidest comment I've ever heard in my life. I didn't say that, of course. I just looked at him, then I looked at the crew, and then, you know, stood there. It's kind of how it went for a moment.
So none of this got on the air, right?
None of this. Oh, but there's more. There's more.
All on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. Should I just pay by numbers? Maybe my life according to others. Should I just let it be when these arms are dead set? It's dead as hell, I'm running fast, thinking about mortality. Wonder where and when and how deep my mug will be. Caught in a twisted supply in someone else's dream, where I keep trying to wake up, baby. Little more than I see, I speak. Isn't there more than this? Isn't there more than this? Isn't there more? Isn't there more? Isn't there more than this? Isn't there more than this? Isn't there more than this? Isn't there more? Oh, oh. I mean, in the end, though, I've got to say, I did get a vote from Paula. She was in. I was in on that. But Simon was very offended. He told me that I I wasn't moving, and I told him that there was a spike mark and that security told me if I moved I would be tackled. And it was just a fascinating series of little exchanges between Simon and I. And
was that true about security?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I guess someone had thrown a cup at him or something or gone after him the year before, and they were very paranoid. And I wasn't going to move from my spike mark, you know. I mean, I've acted enough. I'll hit my mark, and I will stay there, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
So it goes.
Well, yeah, we're listening to, that was Pain by Numbers. It's off this EP, which kind of predated the formation of your current band.
Right, right, yeah. Right. The entire EP is basically J.J. Willems, who actually used to play with Theta. Those kids, I think they're still around, right? And it's basically just him and I playing almost everything. It's, I play trombone, piano, guitar, and some auxiliary percussion, and I sing on this.
Cool. Yeah. So, you know, tell us about the difference between whatever, you know, people might see at a show now versus, you know, a year ago, what your set would have been like.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing right now is we do about, we play everything is up-tempo, and everything is pretty much, you know, sorry, I'm really distracted by the music right now because I'm wondering how we play this differently.
Here, we'll let you figure it out. I just do what you wanted. When you drop it down, flip
it around. You're gonna make me. I mean, the biggest difference is, like, it's in your face now. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, this is very, sterile is the way it feels right now. And live, I think it's obviously it's a live music experience. I mean, you get out to a show. We like to play the Jazz House, and I love the ambiance of the Jazz House. I love the people that come out to the show, and they get up and they shake their asses, you know, and I like that. I mean, there's a function and a utility to the music that at a live show is just so much clearer, you know. It's just like we want you to get up and want you to shake your ass, and I like that.
Definitely. So you guys actually covered Newsy's song at one of your shows.
Oh, yes! I love Disney music. You know what Disney does? Disney writes hits. And I mean, yes. Aside from the whole, like, slave labor thing, Disney is great. Like, and they write hits. So we do, we started doing a Jungle Book cover. It is killer. It's so killer. And we do a full Newsy's cover. And that has three movements to it, by the way. It was, I think when I transcribed it, it was 17 pages long initially. But it is a blast. And you know what's weird? Newsy's fans are intense. They come out of the woodwork. When you start playing a Newsy song, anybody that is really into Newsy's, you see them looking around, like trying to find the other Newsy's fans in the room, and they'll obviously, like, they'll, like, make eye contact, and then they'll be up on the floor. It's crazy. It's like a revolution.
So that's the party off.
It does.
Disney style. So, is musical rock, like, the next, like, big thing, you think? Like, a revival of this Disney musical rock and roll?
I don't know. I mean, I still think, you know, Disney makes hits. Think about it. If you think about
of course
the
Disney
genre...
Makes hits.
Yeah,
they're Disney.
Yeah, they're Disney. But, I mean, but if you think about it, what was the highest DVD sales, what, last year, right? High School Musical. Is that sick or what?
Yeah.
It's disturbing, to be honest. But I mean, they're still in the game, and they're still writing, you know, the greatest branch, or the greatest crossover between pop and musical theater. Hmm. I mean, it's
so this stuff
it's
all
Disney.
Seems to overlap in your world. I mean, you spend most of your time, I mean, acting. That is what you do for a living.
Yeah.
Various stage productions all about the area. But do you try and keep some distance between your, you know, your musical performer personality and your theater personality, or do you just let it all kind of?
Well, I mean, it all kind of overlaps, and as an actor, I really say that the music thing is on the side, because what I intend to do professionally for the rest of my life is act, you know, and I've known that since about, I guess, 10th grade. Mm-hmm. Someone came up to me and said I should consider it, and I...
Your mom.
My mom. No, I don't know who. I actually don't remember. It was very strange. It was some Russian woman who had been to the, I guess, the Moscow Art Theater and said she saw a production there that she thought I would have been really great in. It was a very strange moment. But I thought to myself, you know what? I could do this for a living. And now I do.
Well, yeah, you do the music pretty well, too. Here's some more. This is called Number 4, i.e. Something Good.
That's
tell me what makes you complete. And what is your greatest sin? You turn your back on me like you should, but you lost something good. I could read your replies from the look in your eyes, and you know things are not as they should be. And yes, I am surprised I can buy all the lies that I tell myself.
Well, I'm surprised we didn't get to this sooner, but you knew it'd have to come eventually. You're broadband man.
I was broadband man.
For a time.
Prior to it being replaced by the, magnificent cartoon that it is today.
The budget cutbacks, that whole thing.
Well, I mean,
animation, so.
It's just that as broadband man, I was such an incredible actor, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I moved my eyes back and forth. I think that's about the most brilliant acting choice I made as broadband man, was moving my eyes.
Yeah,
it was,
that's all people can see, right?
Yeah, but it gave you powers.
Mm-hmm.
When I was broadband man, I could do anything. I was telling you earlier, I knocked on a cop's window in the middle of an intersection, knocked on his window. He rolled it down. I said, "Excuse me, I'm looking for high-priced cable. Have you seen it?" And he literally pointed direction, and I ran off. And he just was laughing. Another group of huge, burly, masculine bikers. They're over on their Harleys or whatever, and I walk over into the middle of this gang that could, you know, kill me. And
what on most occasions?
Yeah, probably. And of course, I'm in the broadband man outfit at this time, and I say, "Mind if I hop on one of your hogs?" I just can't resist, and they literally. I jump on one of these things, and all of a sudden they transform into like Japanese schoolgirls. They have these little digital cameras, and they're all laughing and giggling, and they circle around, they're taking pictures of me on their motorcycles and hanging out with them. It was insane. Here's the best one. They had to downsize the cod piece. Did you know this?
No, of course not.
When I was taking pictures with old ladies and stuff, they would always be like kind of like looking down strangely at me, and they figured out the cod piece was too large. They had to downsize my cod piece, which, you know, I mean, maybe it's just I don't need to compensate. You know, maybe that's what it comes down to. But I'm sure that was an interesting discussion with the world.
Yeah, we'll delete this part. No, we won't actually. So moving on, tell us a little bit about your likes and dislikes in the musical realm. I got some of your influences here. I'll list them off. Stevie Wonder, Ben Folds 5, Maroon 5, Jason Mraz, Sam Cooke, Bobby McFerrin, and Cake. No, Bobby McFerrin's awesome. What am I talking about? I love Bobby McFerrin.
Have you heard Bobby McFerrin's like more recent stuff in the last years?
What's he doing?
It's incredible. He's one of the best a cappella vocalists in the world.
Wow,
and he's conducted the, San Francisco Philharmonic. He has a great career as a classical music conductor, and he's just incredibly talented, and as a jazz vocalist as well.
Okay, so, but which ones do you think you actually emulate when you sit down at a piano? I know you're your own man, and you write your own songs,
sure.
But, like, who's really stuck in your head as your top three?
I'd say Ben Folds 5. Has always been an influence.
How do you feel about post-5 right Ben Folds' career?
Oh, isn't it disappointing? I mean, you can't argue.
Questions
can you?
For you, man.
You can't argue that. It's disappointing. Well,
a little bit.
It's just a bummer. But I mean, he's still, I think, brilliant. I mean, I honestly, this is sacrilegious to some people, but I would say Ben Folds can top Billy Joel, like most days of the week. If you would like, we can play number 6.
He definitely beats Disney Billy Joel. I'll tell you that much. But you might beg to differ.
Have you heard that that Twyla Tharp musical? Well, who has? Never mind. What am I saying? I give up. It's just like half the things I would talk about are tangents in musical theater that no one cares about.
Well, what is it? Go for it. We don't get to talk musical theater very much.
It's just it's moving out. It's a Billy Joel musical, but it's really just one guy at the piano playing and everybody else is dancing. So I don't know if it's so much a musical as a Well, yeah. It is what it is.
Do you try and put yourself in musicals more than non-musicals when it comes
to theater? I get hired more in musicals than non-musicals.
Yeah.
It's really not much of a choice sometimes. Right now, the show I'm doing is a play with music. But, I mean, I've done, you know, in the last year and a half that I've been working professionally, it's been about 60-40, mostly musicals, but, I mean, I also did, you know, classical theater. I did Othello, and I did another world premiere, Life on the Mississippi, which is a Mark Twain novel.
This is the last song before the one that you didn't want people to hear, so let's listen to it.
Enough time for the fade out.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly.
Isn't that awesome?
Just in time for
no,
the fade
okay.
out.
No, it's okay. Go ahead and play number six. I mean, this last track actually was... I actually wrote it about an acting company. I have a lot of these songs. They all sound like love songs, but they're not.
Yeah.
But it's more palatable when it sounds that way, isn't it?
Yeah.
It seems like it, at least.
Yeah. All right. Here, let it all hang out.
Most of what I've seen. So all that is left is a dream of a memory. Reality slowly diffusing. It's mildly amusing to know. The present is seems so compelling, but after returning is gone. And we go on now, back to the moment just at hand. When I was telling you something previously planned. We say hellos and goodbyes, we turn style eyes and so. I'm surprised that in passing something more lasting would show. And I know how I know.
And the only reason I mentioned that was because you were a little bashful in the pre-interview that we did. You said, "Don't play number six."
Oh yeah,
get
man.
Me nuts.
It's one of those. It's kind of a. Well, the vast majority of what we play is sort of a guilty pleasure to a lot of people in Lawrence, Kansas, because it's such an, you know, it's such an indie rock inundated town that it's kind of like, I don't know if it's hip enough to play actual pop music, you know. But so it's sort of a guilty pleasure, but mostly just a pleasure, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of my guilty pleasure, because doesn't it feel a little devious and underhanded when I say sweet things in songs? Because it's like it's so easy when you play poppy pop music for people to say, you know, well, it's just you know, sugary mush, or it's, and so you have to sort of balance lyrically what you're saying with the sort of general tone and timbre of the song. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, at least in my mind.
So when you get to that point where you start to worry about or get self-conscious about being too, you know, sweet and confectionery,
uh-huh.
Do you go over the line and just go for it, or do you kind of
Well, it depends. Bring
it back in?
I just wrote a song called Away that we're actually going to play at the Jazz House on the 22nd. It's a brand new song, and I just don't even hesitate. I just go for it. And that's cool sometimes.
Ladies dig it.
I gotta stop. Usually I have to stop myself, because
yeah.
It's like, if I'm not gonna stop myself, who is? You know what I mean?
That's the name of your new record.
If I'm not gonna stop myself, who is?
By Dylan Paul.
Show me more. Forget me not. Seem old fashioned in a way, but so am I. And so I say, forget me now, and I will promise to stay, because something should always remain. You will remain in my heart,
cheap
because
line.
Something should.
Cheap line.
What's that?
Cheap line.
Cheap lie?
Like no, line.
Oh,
like,
line.
Saying things like, and you will remain in my heart because something should always remain, that's the kind of thing where it's just, I want someone to hit me in the face when I say that. You know what I mean? But it was catchy at the time, and people love that song. People on MySpace will be emailing me for days like, oh, that song really, really moves me. I'm like, that is great. I'm glad. I'm sure it moved me at one point, and I wrote it, and now I want to, you know, be hit every time that I sing it. But nonetheless, it has its place, and in the middle of a large set, I think it's great. You know?
You'll have an opportunity to hit Dylan in the face next week on the 22nd?
That's right, 22nd. It's Friday at the Jazz House. We actually have this guy, Scott Smith, opening up for us. He was playing with a band that was signed down in St. Louis, and now he's doing a little solo act thing and starting up a new label. So come check us out the 22nd at the Jazz House. I'll get back from my show around 11, but Scott will go on at 10.
All right. So with a six-piece band, something like that?
Yeah, definitely a six-piece band. It'll be a full dance your ass off kind of experience.
All right. And one last question I wanted to ask you. I heard you were working on a musical theater piece. Is that true?
I'm always working on a musical theater piece. Yeah, I have a full-length musical that I've been working on for over a year and a half. Actually, my entire hard drive just failed on my computer, and I was only able to recover like 75% of it. It was the second to the last draft that I just made, but everything except for, I think, two numbers is now written. So when that will be produced, I'm not exactly certain. But
what's it called? What's it about?
It's called The Oregon Trail, and it's not a historical drama, contrary to popular belief. It's actually more about the Oregon Trail video game. There's a kid in the show that he has a fixation with the Oregon Trail, and it's what he uses as a coping mechanism when he loses his father, and he kind of collapses into this world that he's fabricating around this game of the Oregon Trail that he was playing. So,
awesome.
Sort of a strange,
so it's kinda like
quirky
that
musical, but
Waiting for Guffman musical would be the closest point of reference, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Nothing ever happens on Mars. That kind of thing.
Something like that.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dylan, for coming by.
Thank you.